This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome to our podcast, The Screwtape Letters, Confronting Evil in Our Time. I'm Ian Faith.
And I'm Galen Belinsky. In each episode, we will unpack one of C.S. Lewis's 31 letters and illuminate the nefarious schemes that the devil and his minions play in our world today.
Understanding how the demonic forces seek to separate us from God helps us to expose them,
reject them, and pursue Jesus as the center of our lives.
Subscribe and join us and our guests on this journey, The Screwtape Letters.
My dear Wormwood, I note with grave displeasure that your patient has become a Christian. Do not indulge the hope that you will escape the usual penalties. Indeed, in your better moments, I trust you would hardly even wish to do so. In the meantime, we must make the best of the situation. There is no need to despair. Hundreds of these adult converts have been reclaimed after a brief sojourn in the enemy's camp and are now with us. All the habits of the patient, both mental and bodily, are still in our favor. One of our great allies at present is the church itself. Do not misunderstand me. I do not mean the church as we see her spread out through all time and space and rooted in eternity, terrible as an army with banners. That, I confess, is a spectacle which makes our boldest tempters uneasy. But fortunately, it is quite invisible to these humans. All your patient sees is the half-finished sham Gothic erection on the new building estate. When he goes inside, he sees the local grocer, with rather an oily expression on his face, bustling up to offer him one shiny little book containing a liturgy which neither of them understands, and one shabby little book containing corrupt texts of a number of religious lyrics, mostly bad and in very small print. When he gets to his pew and looks around him, he sees just that selection of his neighbours whom he has hitherto avoided. You want to lean pretty heavily on those neighbours. Make his mind flit to and fro between an expression like the body of Christ and the actual faces in the next pew. It matters very little, of course, what kind of people that next pew really contains. You may know one of them to be a great warrior on the enemy's side. No matter. Your patient, thanks to our Father below, is a fool. Provided that any of those neighbours sing out of tune, or have boots that squeak, or double chins, or odd clothes, the patient will quite easily believe that their religion must therefore be somehow ridiculous. At his present stage, you see, he has an idea of Christians in his mind, which he supposes to be spiritual, but which, in fact, is largely pictorial. His mind is full of togas and sandals and armours and bare legs, and the mere fact that the other people in church wear modern clothes is a real, though of course an unconscious, difficulty to him. Never let it come to the surface. Never let him ask what he expected them to look like. Keep everything hazy in his mind now, and you will have all eternity wherein to amuse yourself by producing in him the peculiar kind of clarity which hell affords. Work hard, then, on the disappointment or anticlimax which is certainly coming to the patient during his first few weeks as a churchman. The enemy allows this disappointment to occur on the threshold of every human endeavour. It occurs when the boy who has been enchanted in the nursery by stories from the Odyssey buckles down to really learning Greek. It occurs when lovers have got married and begin the real task of learning to live together. In every department of life, it marks the transition from dreaming aspiration to laborious doing. The enemy takes this risk because he has a curious fantasy of making all these disgusting little human vermin into what he calls his free lovers and servants. Sons is the word he uses, with his inveterate love of degrading the whole spiritual world by unnatural liaisons with the two-legged animals. Desiring their freedom, he therefore refuses to carry them, by their mere affections and habits, to any of the goals which he sets before them. He leaves them to do it on their own. And there lies our opportunity. But also, remember, there lies our danger. If once they get through this initial dryness successfully, they become much less dependent on emotion and therefore much harder to tempt. I have been writing hitherto on the assumption that the people in the next pew afford no rational ground for disappointment. Of course, if they do, if the patient knows that the woman with the absurd hat is a fanatical bridge player, or the man with squeaky boots a miser and an extortioner, then your task is so much the easier. All you then have to do is to keep out of his mind the question, if I, being what I am, can consider that I am in some sense a Christian, why should the different vices of those people in the next pew prove that their religion is mere hypocrisy and convention? You may ask whether it is possible to keep such an obvious thought from occurring even to a human mind. It is, Wormwood, it is. Handle him properly, and it simply won't come into his head. He has not been anything like long enough with the enemy to have any real humility yet. What he says, even on his knees, about his own sinfulness is all parrot talk. At bottom, he still believes he has run up a very favourable credit balance in the enemy's ledger by allowing himself to be converted, and thinks that he is showing great humility and condescension in going to church with these smug, commonplace neighbours at all. Keep him in that state of mind as long as you can. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape.
All right, we are into it. Letter 2 from Screwtape to Wormwood. The patient is now officially a Christian. So pretty early in the story, demons suffer a little bit of a loss, and this man has now made a profession of faith. But that is not to dismay Screwtape or Wormwood.
No.
He's got some advice.
I really look at this and think back to my both Catholic roots of being in church, because they talk a lot about the church pews and looking at people around you, knowing your neighbours, because they usually went to a very local church. But also, it brings to me the idea of when I've brought people to church, thinking to myself, what are they thinking?
Mm.
You know, I taken my father to different churches, and some of his comments leaving have been kind of interesting, his observations versus the experience. And you can see what the demons are working towards with Wormwood's influence within here, is make him notice all of those things.
All those imperfections, all those quirks, all those peculiarities. Surely this cannot be the people of God.
Right.
These people are the warriors of God. What did I get myself
into? The guy who overcharged me for something?
Right.
the lady who was rude to me in the street, and now I'm supposed to worship with them in church?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's really trying to cast some early doubt into the life of the believer. And people that come to faith, you know, and a lot of people can resonate with this. If they're not a church necessarily, when they get into church, they realize, all right, I've experienced Jesus in some way. What's the process now? What are the people like? And he's definitely trying to capitalize on the fact that we're not perfect people,
right?
You know, and he's trying to
capitalize on a sense of judgment that we all tend to have, and try to smear Christianity and cause the patient to really doubt what he's gotten into.
So let's stay on this thread for a second, because sure. I think it's something that so many people experience, that when you invite someone to church or you go to a new church, that all of your preconceptions and misconceptions are amplified.
Mm.
Seeing the difference, I've been to so many different religious gatherings, from of the Protestant Mass to Catholic Mass to Evangelical Church, Baptist mm-hmm. churches, and seeing how they all do things differently. The things that are common and comfortable flow, and then the things that are outside of your comfort zone, just because they're not familiar to you, they're like an alarm bell going off. And mm-hmm. I think for a lot of people who are trying to find faith and trying to find a church where they're comfortable in, or a religious life where they're comfortable in, how do they get past those things?
Mm. So I think there's kind of two sides to this coin. So first of all, I come from a background where typically the churches are a lot smaller. I come from more of the Baptist background, in more rural parts of the country. And if I can be really honest, the churches are the places that have, if I not say this in a harsh way, but kind of like the worst aesthetic. They have the ugliest carpet color. They have this weird, ugly bouquet of flowers at the front of the church on the table. And it's like, there are a lot of things when you walk in and you think to yourself, I don't think I would like to decorate my house this way or right. dress like this. There is a level of peculiarity. And I think the church needs to be aware of that we do need to think of ourselves. We need to think outside the box a little bit. And I think the church should be pursuing excellence in all things. I think we should have an excellent aesthetic. I think we should have excellence in the way that we conduct our services. I think we should really do things in a way that is appealing to people on the outside. People should look in and say, something special is happening there. And I think the church probably has fallen into a rut at times, and a lot of different churches probably don't do a really good job of making what they do in their congregations and in their assemblies appealing to people on the outside. So that's kind of like the one side of the coin. But the other side of the coin, I think, is kind of what he talks about a lot in the chapter. The demons are trying to force him to judge other people, to cast stones, which is actually, nothing is more demonic than making an accusation against somebody else. He's trying to get the patient to think like a demon, judge the other person, mock the other person, make fun of the way they're, surely this cannot be the army of God. Like, I mean, right. these people, they don't seem like they could stand much battle for anything.
See, I see it in the story, and it is true in real life as well. He's making him uncomfortable. And if you make someone uncomfortable in a situation, what happens? They don't return.
Sure.
A couple of things from reflections of my father's visits to different churches with me is, one, he'll say things like, and you mentioned the flowers at the front. He actually said to me one day, he goes, I could see a funeral here. That was his exit.
What a great observation.
I'm like, really?
This seems like death. It doesn't right. seem like a lot of life.
There you go. And then another one, he said, he goes, I didn't realize music was supposed to be that loud in church, which okay. I thought was really interesting, right? So my sure. dad's like one of those very traditionalists. He got himself in his church that he goes to a comfort zone. And I think a lot of people do that, which, and here's a question for you with this, and it doesn't happen in this letter, but I would have liked to have seen all them talk about who's asking questions, who's talking about issues, who's talking about challenges to particular, like, why is the music so loud? No one's asking that question. Like, why is the carpet so... Woo?
Sure.
None of those questions are being asked. And I think that would help a lot of visitors to new churches get to that comfort zone.
Yeah.
If they felt they were open to ask the questions, where maybe there's a bit of a... misunderstanding with people that you go and you don't ask questions.
It's not a super healthy culture.
No, it's not. It's like blind belief.
Right.
Don't ask. Don't challenge.
Because if that's how we approach even asking all the questions of the common things about the way we assemble and gather and sing and read and speak and preach, if we're not able to ask those things, how are we supposed to ask the deeper questions about truth propositions of what Christianity really stands about?
And, right.
You know, if it sets a culture of just like, well, we just don't ask. We keep it ugly on the outside.
And then, if you think of it from any business situation, having that feedback from customers or other companies you deal with, that's how you know where to grow.
Sure.
And what to change.
Sure.
And what's maybe holding you back from being more successful? And obviously the metric in church is got to be bringing more people to Christ. And the more you can do that, I believe faith wins.
Sure.
And if those questions like, why is the music too loud? Or why is the music not loud enough? Or why aren't they singing in tune? I remember joking one day coming out of Catholic church, someone said, oh, I don't see you hear much. And I said, ah. Oh. I said, I have a hard time. I'm like, the music's so bad. And the guy who lives in our neighborhood said, my daughter's in the choir.
Oh, no. I'm terrible.
I was looking for the big hole to swallow me up, right? But
Well, I think it's also like, there is the church should not be a superficial place. We should not be hung up on the aesthetics. Or like church is about being saved by Jesus and what Jesus has done and accomplished. But I don't think we should count off the aesthetics. Being mindful of carrying that balance of like what you win people with, you also win people too.
Right.
So if people come because the music is excellent and it's a great experience and the kids ministry is great, I mean, you need to be careful that they better also be hearing about Jesus, because what you win them with is ultimately what you're going to win them to. But I think, you know, the dynamic of this chapter is really talking about kind of the silly aspects of the liturgy and protocol, peculiar aesthetics and things like that. I think that is a really important thing in the church world. But kind of on that flip side of the coin, I think he's trying to get his patient to view things in a judgmental and harsh way.
Yep.
And not be willing to view people the way God sees them.
Right.
And I think it has that like, we're all a little, you know, peculiar in the way we look and operate. But the beautiful thing about the church is that God can use regular people to do extraordinary things. You can use ordinary people to do ordinary things. And he talks about the line in here. He's like, oh, and I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about the universal church. And he's like, even our greatest warriors couldn't do much of a battle against that, you know, the universal church, because God has been saving people and doing a work in people's lives for thousands of years. This is nothing new. And I think it's good to remember that even common people, your grocer, you know, your brother who you know is a sinner, or
yeah.
God can use all of these people. And I think it's good to be able to see people through the lens of what God sees in people and how he can restore and redeem and use those people, and not look at people. You know, he talks about his patient being a fool. And in the Proverbs, it talks about fool constantly being a mocker. Come in with a mocker's eyes. Come in as a critic, and just remember all these people are ridiculous, and you'll doubt this.
Everyone's patient. A hypocrite.
It's just the truth of the matter.
Yeah, but interestingly, though, I think we're going to have a lot of listeners who are going to be Christians, who take other people to church, and Christians love asking other people to come to church. Builds a sense of community, friendship. But there is that moment where we know that probably the return rate on people going to a new church, I don't know exactly what it is, it's probably not that high. And I think because of these reasons, that they go in there with these conceptions, misconceptions. So This is a nice way for other people to take what's in this letter, understand that this is happening, that the people you bring to your church are going to be experiencing all the signs, the smells, the visions, all of this different inputs,
mm-hmm.
and making a determination. And a lot of it's going to be that they're uncomfortable because it's not familiar. Mm. So how do you get past that to actually bring them back? And within the letter, he's like, keep him focused on all these things.
Right. He even says, like, make the association between all of the people that he sees. Keep his mind going back and forth between expressions like the body of Christ and then the actual faces that he sees.
Right.
And the idea is, like, try to mock these people, look at their flaws and faults and failures, and say, this is the body of Christ. This is what I've signed up for. And again, I think it's us to remember, like, we should present our best. We should make the church and the worship of God's people something that we should draw people in and want to be a part of. But also remember, it's okay if yeah. God uses us in our flaws. You can look at walk into a church and see the faces of those people. Yes, absolutely. That is the body of Christ. God is saving those people. God is redeeming those people. But I think even getting converts to be uncomfortable or be comfortable with something that's new, the worship of God's people, the assembling of God's people, it is going to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And I think kind of the point that Screwtape is making in the letter is that it's only a matter of time before what's unfamiliar and uncomfortable to him actually will become comfortable. So take advantage of this very special time. There's this failure to launch period when people become a Christian. The early days, you're most vulnerable.
The uncomfortable, unfamiliar.
Yeah, and it's the infancy stage. And I literally think of it like, we just had our second child 6 months ago. And when a baby's first born, it's like, it's so vulnerable in those first days. You know, any little sickness could impact the child. Any type of injury, if the child were, you know, fall out of bed or something like that, or they're so vulnerable in those first days. And every single day, I literally think of it as every single day that I just keep the child healthy and alive is a huge victory, where they're getting stronger and healthier, and the viability of that child's life goes up exponentially in those first 6 weeks or so. I think it's the same in the Christian walk.
It is, absolutely.
And I think it's only a matter of time before some of those things that might seem a little weird and peculiar, he'll start to actually see the beauty behind it. He'll actually start to see God is using regular people. And rather than saying, wait a second, this is the body of Christ? That's the lady at the grocery store.
Yeah.
You can actually change your thinking and say, how amazing is it that God can use my neighbor down the street to actually fulfill his purposes in the world? He can use me too.
Exactly. Now, he also says in that, you know, don't let him, Screwtape says, don't let him compare himself to others. And the beauty of that, and I think a lot of us again fall into this, which is if he all of a sudden starts to say, well, I'm not that great a guy, I'm mocking and I'm judging these people there, but I have my own failings. And the demon doesn't want him to compare, because if by comparing, now all of a sudden it draws him closer to that comfort zone.
Because he's able to empathize with them.
Right.
So the enemy is literally trying to keep haughty eyes looking at the other people's faults. Don't come with an attitude of grace and humility. And literally, we're talking about the works of the flesh versus the works of the spirit. We're literally talking about like the way of God and the way of Satan.
Right.
He's literally have haughty eyes, have a judgmental spirit, have a mocker's mentality, and judge other people and say, this is ridiculous. I don't want to be part of this. But if you can say, well, I know I'm a sinner and I've come to Christ. I know I have a lot of faults and failures. If God can use me, well, why wouldn't he be able to use him? And he actually, he says a line in here. Where does he say it? He basically says, and don't let his mind go there. And I know it seems like a very obvious thought, but don't worry, Wormwood, you can keep that thought out of his mind. I actually think that line is kind of the crux of the chapter. Where does he say it? All you have to do then, all you then have to do is to keep out of his mind the question, if I, being what I am, can consider that I am in some sense a Christian, why should the different vices of those people in the next pew prove that their religion is mere hypocrisy and convention?
Exactly. Yeah.
And, yeah. it's like, actually, if God can save me, God can save them. And if God can use me, God can use them. But the demonic is always going to try to keep you haughty, judgmental, casting accusation, and not embrace a humble spirit to say, God has saved me, God has saved them. And maybe this is the beauty of what the church actually is.
And if you notice, it's interesting that they made this episode about this, particularly within a church. Like, they could have had this within a sports team he's playing with, or friends that he gathers with. Mm-hmm. But to actually put this into a church, I think it really encapsulates the whole idea of, if you can make them fail there, everywhere else you probably as a demon win.
Mm.
Because if in God's house that you're able to make them feel uncomfortable and better than and more pious than, and, oh, I'm not as bad as those people, I don't want to be gathering with those people, of course they're not going to bring him to Christ anywhere else, because they've already defeated him at this juncture.
Right.
And having this as letter two, it's interesting that they go into the church, into letter two, to introduce this.
Right. Yeah, it's right from the get-go, cast doubt, cast criticism against what the church is, how it operates, and what it stands for. Get him before he starts to get established in his faith, because now he's got a really sacred time when a believer is new to cast all kinds of doubts and ideas in his mind. And he also talks about an interesting dynamic. What does he say? The dreaming versus the doing. When a believer comes in, he might have an over-idealized view of the church and how great or easy it is to be a Christian. But the fact of the matter is, being a Christian means working with imperfect people.
Sacrifices.
Being a Christian means going through the grind day in and day out. What is he saying that? He talks about in every department of life, it marks the transition from dreaming aspiration to laborious doing. And he says God is actually okay with it, or what he says, the enemy. The Lord is actually okay with it for them to be able to want to do these things out of their own will, because that's a heart that's ultimately for the Lord. And when you come to Christ, and when you're early in your walk, you're not going to fully understand what it takes to be able to follow Christ and walk with. You're not going to know the cost of the journey of Christ until you get into it and catch your patient early before Yes. before he's willing to really double down and understand fully what he signed up for. Catch him early to tell him the labor of doing following Christ is not worth it.
Which is interesting. It just came to me. You think about religion being taken out of the schools. Mm. What a better way to separate people from God early than to take religion and take the word out of their lives in school.
From an early age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we see it working. And it's a struggle, because raising children in and around a culture that doesn't value that time with God or that religious teaching, now all of a sudden it becomes harder. So again, like they're saying here, in their walk, get them early. I think the devil's got a pretty good foothold on the world in taking it out of American schools and, again, separating them early.
Well, and the other thing that it does, it makes what happens in the church that much more peculiar, because it used to be, you go back
right.
50, 100 years, you have prayer in schools. Yeah. You recite the Pledge of Allegiance and you read Bible verses. So it wasn't strange. It wasn't unfamiliar. So the more that it's become distant from the commonplace, it's that much more. You walk into a church and it's that much more of a culture shock. And I think it's kind of like I said, it's two sides of the same coin. I think it's something the church should be aware of and say, we do want what we do here to look not like a funeral, but like right. a celebration. It should be appealing. People should walk into a church service and say, I want what these people have. So there is an element of the church having to step up and realize that they want to be appealing and they want to draw people in to worship Jesus. But also that that aspect of being different, kind of the other side of the coin, it's also a great asset of the church.
Yeah.
It's not something to be frustrated with. It's a tool to use to our advantage, because the truth of the matter is the church has something different to offer than anything else in the world has. Even if you go to a rock concert, I mean, that you'll have a great time. It'll be a great show. The production, the lighting, the music will be amazing. But ultimately, I mean, what's a concert with some pop artists? There's nothing that can feed your soul there.
No.
So the church can actually
show. It's fleeting
it's super shell. So the same thing that might be a little bit unattractive initially can be the church's greatest strength. We do have something different. And it might seem a little weird at first, but that's not bad.
So takeaways from this letter for the listeners. For me, it's keep inviting people to church, but understand, listening to this episode and listening to the letter, what they're going to be going through. They're going to have questions. They're going to have doubts. They're going to be uncomfortable. They're going to nitpick on things that don't really mean anything, but to them, they're little thorns that are keeping them.
Something that you've overlooked because you've seen it a million times, and you're like, "Yeah, that is kind of weird. Why do we do it that way? Or why is that sitting?" You know. Well,
yep.
Have that understanding and empathy of a fresh perspective from somebody coming to church, but keep the work up of inviting people, and show them like where the value of the church ultimately is. You know, can you see past the things that might be different, or even embrace some of those things that might be different, to see that there actually is something special going on?
Yep, show them the beauty. So that's it for the second letter, and we'll see you again on Screwtape Letters.